Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Authorities in London said Saturday dozens of people are presumed dead after the fire erupted inside a high-rise apartment building earlier this week.
Sadly, at this time, there are 58 people who we have been told were in Grenfell Tower on the night that are missing, and therefore, sadly, I have to assume that they are dead.
The spokesman says police will conduct a criminal investigation into the circumstances of the fire early this week. A judge in the city of Philadelphia here in the U.S. declaring a mistrial in the sexual assault case involving famed comedian Bill Cosby after the jury could not reach a verdict. A statement was read from Cosby's wife, Camille.
How do I describe the district attorney? Heinously and exploitively ambitious. How do I describe the judge? Overtly arrogant and collaborating with the district attorney. How do I describe the counsels for the accusers? Totally unethical. How do I describe many, but not all, general media? Blatantly vicious entities that continually disseminated intentional omissions of truths for the primary purpose of greedily selling sensationalism at the expense of a human life.
Attorney Gloria Allred's client testified in the trial, and she believes that Cosby's fame may have played a factor in the case.
We can never underestimate the blinding power of celebrity, but justice will come.
The prosecutor said he plans to retry the case. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Search and rescue teams still trying to locate seven American sailors missing after the U.S. Navy destroyer they were on collided with a merchant vessel off the coast of Japan. The USS Fitzgerald has returned to Yokosuka, Japan on Saturday. The Navy said two crew members, in addition to the commanding officer, were treated for injuries. No one on the Philippine flag container ship was reported injured. The cause of the collision was not immediately clear. An Afghan soldier, fired on another Afghan soldier, killing him and wounding three U.S. soldiers and another Afghan soldier in northern Afghanistan. This took place on Saturday. A spokesman for the Afghan Defense Ministry said the shooting occurred inside the base and that an investigation is underway. The spokesman said the attacker was killed. President Trump has rolled back parts of President Obama's agreements with Cuba. New measures include tightening the restrictions on tourism travel and prohibiting financial dealings with entities tied to Cuban military and intelligence services. According to a senior Trump official, Americans will be able to travel to Cuba under approved categories, but there will be stricter enforcement to ensure travelers fit those categories. The U.S. Embassy in Havana will remain open. The International Organization for Migration reporting efforts are ongoing to rescue around 200 migrants from Somalia and Ethiopia who have been kidnapped in Libya and are being held for ransom. Lisa Schlein has more on the story.
News of the kidnappings and illegal detentions in Libya first surfaced in a video which appeared on Facebook on June 9th. The International Organization for Migration says families of the missing men and women have received ransom demands based on short video clips depicting scenes of active torture. IOM spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA the source of the video is not known, but there is little doubt as to its veracity. The IOM reports it is working with partners to try to locate the migrants. It says IOM staff, in coordination with authorities in Libya, is trying to trace and potentially aid in the rescue of these victims. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Russian President Vladimir Putin expressed disappointment Saturday over possible new sanctions to be levied against his country by the U.S., but said it's too early to speak of retaliatory actions. The new sanctions passed Wednesday target Russians involved in serious human rights abuses, supplying weapons to the Syrian government, carrying out malicious cyber activities, and doing business with Russian intelligence and defense. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting here in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
There were a number of issues the church wanted to bring to his attention. One of them, of course, is the continued incarceration of the opposition leader, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema.
Prominent Zambian church groups demand the immediate release of main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema.
The chairman, Chibukati, had convened the meeting in order to find a way out on two issues. The first one on the ballot papers, and the second one was on the register of voters.
Officials from the Kenyan Electoral Commission meet with presidential candidates and their representatives ahead of the elections.
What Mawio, the newspaper in question, did, which incurred the wrath of the government, is publishing basically the deliberations that were carried out in the National Assembly.
And the Tanzanian government comes under criticisms from civil society and opposition groups for banning an independent newspaper for 2 years. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Zambian Council of Churches, the Evangelical Fellowship and the Conference of Catholic Bishops have unanimously called for the release of main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. At a news conference Friday, the church group said Hichilema is a political prisoner who should be treated with respect. But supporters of the ruling party say the church groups have become political. Hichilema, who faces treason charges, is on trial for allegedly endangering Zambian President Edgar Lungu's life in April when his motorcade failed to give way to the presidential motorcade. Father Cleophas Lungu, General Secretary of the Catholic Bishops' Conference, told me that by the country's constitution, Hakainde Hichilema is innocent until he is proven otherwise.
Suffice for me to mention that the church mother bodies has been making efforts for now close to a month, trying to seek an appointment to meet the Republican president, because there were a number of issues the church wanted to bring to his attention. One of them, of course, is the continued incarceration of the opposition leader, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema. In press briefing, the three church mother bodies did make a call on the powers that be to release Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, believing that so far he has not been found guilty by the court, and that if the charge slated against him of treason is sustained, he could be held under house arrest or alternatively be restricted in a specific area. But at least he would be living in a humane, you know, environment.
What were the reasons given to the church bodies as to why your efforts to seek audience with President Edgar Chagwa Lungu have not yielded any fruit at the moment?
Well, we are unaware of any reason. What we know is that our efforts to meet the president have not yielded the anticipated results, and that the efforts of the church along that path of seeking dialogue with the government, especially with His Excellency Mr. Edgar Chagwa Lungu, the President of the Republic of Zambia, have not been allowed to succeed. Suffice for me again to say that you would perhaps succeed if you were to ask that question and get the answers for us.
Father Lungu, some Zambians are saying that the call for HH release or treated humanely, as the churches called on Friday, is interfering with the judicial process as stipulated in the constitution, because they argue that there's a separation of powers and that the judiciary is acting independently from the presidency. What say you?
Well, we believe that after all is done and said, at the bottom of our hearts We believe that we are dealing with people who have a conscience. We believe that we are dealing with people who often claim to be Christians. We are dealing with a government which has committed and gone further to declare this as a Christian nation. And the church is acting from its standpoint of being the conscience of the nation. We are saying, as church mother bodies, in other words, appealing to the conscience of our political leaders to not only exercise their legal or political wisdom, but also spiritual wisdom.
Let me ask you this, Father Lungu. The president has called on church groups, as well as those urging him to have a dialogue with the opposition, to first encourage the opposition to accept him as the legitimate president of the Republic of Zambia before you would even ask him to do so. Why hasn't church groups in Zambia done what the president has asked you to do?
In fact, we didn't need to be asked. The church does not need to be asked by politicians to do what is right. The church always endeavors, always aspires to do what is right. And again, suffice for me to mention that the church has several times had meetings with leaders from the opposition party. That is not a problem. The problem has been that the church has not had that access in order to meet those who have and enjoy the instruments of power, those who can set the ball rolling.
Father Cleophas Lungu is the General Secretary of the Zambian Catholic Bishops Conference. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Officials of the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, met Thursday with representatives of presidential candidates ahead of the August 8 general election. High on the agenda included award of contract to a Dubai-based company to print ballot papers to be used for the polls, as well as a recent audit conducted by KPMG regarding the voter list to be used for the election. This after opposition groups expressed concern about the contract to the Dubai-based printing company. For more, I reach Dr. Roslyn Kwamboka Akombe, Commissioner at the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission.
The goal for the meeting, the Chairman Chebukati had convened the meeting in order to find a way out on two issues. The first one on the ballot papers, and the second one was on the register of voters, just finalizing and how we move forward with the three key issues related to the audit done by KPMG of the Register of Voters.
How did the topic of the audit by the KPMG about the voter register go?
I think the discussions on the Register of Voters was more straightforward, frankly speaking, and there was more agreement on how we move forward with that, except for one political coalition, NASA, that promised to get back to us in writing with their comments. But basically what we wanted to ensure is that they were updated on where we were in terms of finalizing the register, because we needed to finalize the register by the 16th of June for purposes of it being then loaded into the technology that will be used for the elections. I think the three areas we wanted to make sure we had the political leadership with us was for them to be aware of the 92,700 voters that we were going to expunge from the register of voters. Then we also needed to find a way out on issues of people who actually share duplicate IDs. And then the third issue that we wanted to draw their attention is that we have about 5,000 Kenyans who do not have biometrics that and they are in our register. And these are mostly persons with disabilities, and maybe one or two few cases of people's biometrics that are not very clear. The issue about the 1 million potential deceased voters who might be our registered, those are estimates. KPMG has not given us names of 1 million people, and should they have those names, then we could be able to expunge them from the register. But what they have, the 1 million, are projected deaths. Their statistics of, if you were to go with the death rate in our country, and you look at the registration rate in our country, then you would potentially have had a million people who are deceased.
Talk about the ballot paper printing as the IEBC had contracted a Dubai-based company. However, some of these opposition parties are saying that the Dubai company was chosen since it had an apparent link to President Uhuru Kenyatta, and they are saying by and large that the company could possibly rig the vote on behalf of the ruling coalition. What is the IEBC's reaction to that?
I mean, look, we've been very clear. Chairman Chebukati has been very clear, and in the meeting, both in public and in the meetings with the candidates, he said to them that if we have evidence of any malpractice or corrupt practices from our staff, they should be able to provide us the evidence and we'll be able to take action. As far as we know, there hasn't been any malpractice that has taken place. The process for acquiring the ballot papers was above board, and we've not seen any processes that have been, you know, that you could look and say that they have been done, you know, beyond the law. I mean, those are the accusations. Just the same way, in the same meeting, we had the Jubilee Party accuse NASA of pushing a South African company to be given the tender for ballot paper. So, I mean, those are accusations, and until you have any concrete points or concrete evidence, we cannot move just on the basis of innuendos that we hear from political leaders.
Is the IEBC working with security agencies in the country in terms of ensuring a peaceful election process? Because some Kenyans have expressed concern about possible post-election violence or election violence during the process of voting. Is there any arrangement with security agencies concerning protecting the vote and ensuring a peaceful process?
Absolutely. We've been working very hard, and we had, this past week, we had a very successful national conference, national election conference, that brought together various stakeholders, that brought together Kenyans to commit themselves to peace, first of all. But, you know, because that is important, that commitment from the Kenyan people and all actors to peace is very important. And we had President Kenyatta and Right Honorable Raila Odinga also sign the peace pledge, which was very important. We've developed a very detailed security plan, and we've been training security officials all over the country. We are continuing with the training we had done the national level. We have now moved the training from the national level to the county level, and we're going to move down to the constituency level and to the various wards, because we want to ensure that the security officials also understand their roles and are able to manage the various responsibilities that they have in the country.
Dr. Roslyn Kwamboka Akombe is a commissioner at the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. She spoke with me from the U.S. state of New Jersey. The Tanzanian government has banned an independent newspaper, Mawio, for 24 months. The newspaper was banned for publishing on its front page pictures of former presidents Benjamin Mkapa and Jakaya Kikwete, linking them to challenges in the mining industry. The online edition of the newspaper was also banned on social media platforms for the next 2 years. Civil society and opposition groups have condemned the ban as an assault on the freedom of speech and expression as enshrined in the constitution. For reaction, I read Tanzanian opposition legislator Tundu Lissu in the capital, Dodoma.
It is typical of the current administration of President John Pombe Magufuli that since coming to power roughly 2 years ago, there has been a war against the free press and freedom of expression. What Mawio, the newspaper in question, did, which incurred the wrath of the government, is publishing basically the deliberations that were carried out in the National Assembly here in Dodoma about the controversy surrounding President Magufuli's seizure of property from this Canadian mining company called Acacia. And in the debate in Parliament, statements were made to the effect that the current state of Tanzanian mining has been brought about by two former presidents, President Benjamin Mkapa and President Kikwete, who was in power between 2005 to 2015.
Tundu, are you therefore saying that the government acted illegally and flouted the constitution, which guarantees freedom of speech and expression?
Absolutely, my brother. Absolutely. the president, the minister, Dr. Makembe, who is a very prominent lawyer, by the way, acted completely illegally. There is no law that prohibits any discussion, any publication of any information concerning former president. And in any case, at any rate, the statements that were published came from parliamentary debates, from parliamentary proceedings. Those communications are privileged everywhere in the world, but not in Tanzania.
Some critics of the government are saying that if what they reported was illegal, then the deliberation itself in parliament should be illegal. But supporters of the government are saying that the government has made efforts to ensure that it's only the state media that carries out deliberations in parliament. What is the reaction on the ground?
My brother, parliamentary debates in our parliament have become a matter of gravest concern. The debate concerning these two former presidents was actually later on was banned by the Speaker of the House because orders given by the president in Dar es Salaam. So even parliament itself is being undermined. The freedom of debate in the House is under threat.
Does that mean that there's a breach of the separation of powers between the legislature and the executive, and that what the executive wants is what is done in the legislature? So democracy in Tanzania is under threat. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, democracy is under peril. For the past 1 year and a half, the government, the executive, has taken almost complete control of parliament. Decisions by the government are just rubber stamped by parliament. We have a situation where during debates in parliament, the speaker receives written messages from members of the government and then makes the next ruling. This particular ruling concerning the two former presidents was made by the person who was chairing on Thursday upon instructions, literally instructions from the government chief whip, a cabinet minister.
Well, they are saying there's no proof of that and that opposition are making some of these up and that the government led by President Magufuli respects the separation of powers. What do you say to that?
Our standing orders, our parliamentary standing orders are very clear that you cannot raise a matter concerning the president which is negative unless you want to bring a motion of impeachment. Those are our standing orders. However, those standing orders refer to a sitting president, not to a former president. And the case that we have here concerns two former presidents, one of them, Mr. Kikwete, for actions that he took when he was not even a president. So he's simply not protected by the constitutional immunity against impeachment or anything like that. He's not protected.
Tundu Lissu is a Tanzanian parliamentarian. He spoke with me from Dodoma. The National Dialogue Steering Committee is calling on the South Sudanese government to allow former Vice President Dr. Riek Machar to participate in the much talked about national dialogue. President Salva Kiir said recently that all opposition groups could participate except Machar because he has yet to renounce violence. The committee added that in order to create a conducive atmosphere for the dialogue, the government should also release all political detainees. For VOA, Wake Simon Wudu has more from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
At a news conference in Juba yesterday, leaders of the National Dialogues Steering Committee said opposition leaders, including former First Vice President Riek Machar, must be included in the dialogue so that peace and stability can be restored across the country. Committee spokesperson Alfred Taban says including Machar will help end the ongoing fighting.
There's been a lot of discussions in the steering committee about Riek Machar. And most of the speakers have said Riek should come or Riek should be contacted to participate in this process. So what the president has said is not that important to us. What is important to us is what the steering committee themselves say. And they've all said that Riek must be included in this process.
President Kiir launched the national dialogue last month with the objective of reconciling South Sudanese communities torn apart by the conflict. Mr. Kiir has said he hopes the dialogue will end the conflict and enable South Sudanese to chart a new way forward for the country. Angela Beda, co-chair of the National Dialogue Steering Committee, says the exercise will be inclusive.
Those who carry arms, we want them to come and talk. And that's why the National Dialogue, the principle of inclusivity is very important. That means the National Dialogue is open to all, including those who have got arms.
Last year, Amnesty International released the names of 35 people, including activists and journalists who were arrested and detained for allegedly supporting Machar's rebellion. Taban called on the Kiir administration to release all political detainees across the country.
We are serious that steps should be taken to make the agency conducive, the atmosphere conducive for the holding of dialogue. And one of those is release of all political detainees.
When announcing the dialogue's launch, Mr. Kiir said South Sudan's chief prosecutor general would process the release of all detainees. Since President Kiir called for the release of political prisoners, about a handful of people have been released, including journalist George Livio, who was freed in May after being arrested in August 2014. Beda says the steering committee formed 15 subcommittees, including one for outreach to South Sudanese refugees and to those in the diaspora. He says the committees will begin a meeting next month. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Family members who live with someone with tuberculosis may be shielded against the highly infectious disease by taking vitamin A. As VOA's Jessica Berman reports from Washington, a new study finds that many of those who develop TB are deficient in the nutrient.
In a study in Lima, Peru, researchers found that adults whose diets were deficient in vitamin A had a tenfold increased risk of developing TB from an infected family member. The risk was 20 times higher in young people ages 10 to 19. Vitamin A deficiency is reportedly common among some 30% of the world's population in mostly low and middle-income countries. Megan Murray of Harvard Medical School's Department of Global Health and Social Medicine says investigators followed 6,000 participants who lived with someone with TB for 1 year. All agreed to have their blood drawn at the start of the study. Over the course of the investigation, Murray, a co-researcher, says 192 people became sick. Their blood samples, taken at the beginning of the study, were then compared with those of other close family members who did not develop TB.
And then we took the people who had got disease and went back and looked at their blood samples from the beginning of the study. And in those blood samples, people who had gotten TB were much more likely to have been vitamin A deficient or to be in the lower two quartiles of vitamin A level. So not even technically vitamin A deficient, but just lower than people who didn't get TB. And we were really surprised by that result because it wasn't something that we were expecting or even looking for.
The findings were published in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases. More than 1.8 million people worldwide died of the lung disease in 2015. One-third of the global population is infected with the tuberculosis bacterium, but most will never become ill. Vitamin A deficiency can cause vision problems, so Murray says children are often given a supplement at birth. She says scientific research has shown that vitamin A, or retinol, may modulate the immune system and help ward off diseases like TB. Murray, however, was careful to stress her study did not establish a cause and effect relationship between vitamin A deficiency and the development of tuberculosis. Murray was asked whether it might be possible to shield close family members from tuberculosis by giving them vitamin A supplements if they're found to be deficient.
The effect was so strong and was, as I say, was so unexpected that it does raise that question.
Murray says the next step is to study whether adding vitamin A to antibiotics given to family members of a loved one with TB would offer an additional layer of protection. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Mama Africa. I came, I saw, I conquered. Now then, I come, remember, say.
Drum on. Stalker.
I love my life.
No, now we don't know where tomorrow might bring, but the future, the hours away. So me, I live my life today. Yeah. So love me, make me talk, what my want for talk, me have nothing to say. So me gonna live my life today. Me gonna live my life today. So everybody, I'm gonna sing it out. Ooh, ooh. I love my life. Change, don't make nobody stress you. Don't make no blood pressure make your life left you. Never you hurt a soul unless you have to defend yourself if them try test you. Thank God for my life, yes. Me wake up this morning and alive, yes. Make them go and judge, nobody no perfect. And Father God alone bring brightness. If you don't like, come and say, go find the Lord. Me now no time for the work, a time so hard. Them now mad me, me now gonna psych award. Or go join the morgue, enjoy my life for y'all. Few friends when me have went here to me. Me not trust people, so me choose them carefully. Them are not clean, so them can't come near to me. Can't compare to me. No, now we don't know where tomorrow might bring. God, the future, the hours away. So me, I live my life today. For me, I live my life today. Yeah. So love me, make me talk, what me want for talk. Me have nothing to say. So me, I live my life today. For me, I live my life today. So everybody, I'm just sing it out. I love my life. Never make nobody get the best of you. Look on the person at the mirror, on the dresser too. Tell yourself, say you're not gonna make them pressure you. And live life to the fullest that you better do. Just believe me, me know life not easy. Nuff of we never born with gold spoon for feed with. No be greedy, set a pace in a life and achieve it. Listen to me keenly. I love me L-I-F-E. And till it left me, me a go and keep up here and I pray to Father God. Say holy H, catch me. Me a beg your Father bless me, guide and protect me. Me every wrong move and me making all the streets correct me. No, now we don't know where tomorrow might bring. God, the future, the hours away. So me, I live my life today. For me, I live my life today. Yeah. So love me, make me talk, what me want for talk. Me have nothing to say. So me, I go live my life today. For me, I go live my life today. So everybody, I'm just sing it out. Me love my life. Me love my life.
Solangu, chapu kidogo nile na eye tu. Mumbie au.
kugawanya uwaga ni Mungu Baba. Katuswa siku lalama ithiki mafungu saba. Mejitahidi sana wenda siku mbithisha labda, ila kinachochanganya hakuna mbia kabla. Tena nakupa maua peleke, wasiji natupa naomba wayapoke. Nasuna ntafunga siku ni waombe.
Fish no get fed up, love we a get no get wed up. Kaki no to lead up, fish no get fed up, the love we a get no get wed up. Oh na 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 na.
I'm coming.
LSG. Nigga don't know you. This a song for all of the lovers out there. Nigga, baby picture me and you. But I know the past, so I can't live a moment without you. Now one day I do. The journey is not easy, but I know so impossible for me to plan. Oh, only you. Oh yeah. Take bullets for you, me I know they afraid you. Talk to the news and all over the radio. Tell only Wally, oh. Say me too, oh. A beautiful girl like you need man like me. I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Man like me. A beautiful girl like you need man like me. I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Like me, because you know to let that fish not get fed up. The love way I get no get wetter, no get wetter. So you know to let that fish not get fed up. The love way I get no get wetter, no get wetter. Yeah. Baby girl, you my one and only. Yeah. Anything that you want, just holler with me, no. Say I'm your man, your salon, but no. Yeah. Say mama, don't beat me, say for you sake, I'm ready for dying. Take bullets for you, me, I know they afraid you.
Tell you what.
Talk to the news and all over the radio.
Tell
only Wally, yo. Say me too, you. A beautiful girl like you, need man. Like me, I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Man, like me, a beautiful girl like you need man. Like me, I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Man, like me, because you know to let that fish not get fed up. In love way I get no get wetter, no get wetter. So you know to let that fish not get fed up. The love way I get no go weather.
Baby,
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaites, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, events follow one another like the days of the week. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Recent reports highlight the continuing dire human rights situation in Iran. Ongoing abuses reveal how challenging it will be for Iranian President Hassan Rouhani to live up to campaign promises to improve the human rights situation there. Since President Rouhani's re-election in May, the Center for Human Rights in Iran reports that 8 political and civil rights activists have been given prison sentences of up to 4 years for allegedly reading and spreading feminist literature in Iran. Baha'i student Farzad Safai was expelled one semester away from completing his bachelor's degree at the Islamic Azad University because the university discovered he was a Baha'i. On the day human rights defender and Baha'i rights activist Navid Kanjani was to be released from prison, he was told he must serve an additional year for another purported crime. And the two former presidential candidates, Mehdi Karoubi and Mir Hossein Mousavi, as well as Mousavi's wife, Sohra Rakhnavard, remain under house arrest, despite President Rouhani's statements that they should be released. U.S. Acting Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labor, Virginia Bennett, said recently that the United States is determined to apply pressure on the Iranian government to protect the fundamental freedoms of the Iranian people.
We continue to promote human rights in Iran in a wide variety of ways. In particular, I would recall our acting spokesperson statement on February 14th calling for the release of Mehdi Karoubi, Mir Hossein Mousavi, and Zahra Rakhnavard.
She also noted that the United States has repeatedly called on the government of Iran to release all prisoners of conscience, including the imprisoned members and leaders of Iran's Baha'i community.
Freedom of belief is a fundamental human right, and continued imprisonment, as well as abuse that they sustain while in prison, really crosses a line that I think is very important to the United States.
Acting Assistant Secretary Bennett said, "We are going to continue to hold Iran accountable for its serious human rights abuses." As Secretary of State Rex Tillerson stated in his remarks on the re-election of President Rouhani, the United States hopes that he restores the rights of Iranians to freedom of speech, to freedom of organization, so that Iranians can live the life that they deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.